Good evening. Stand for the pledge to the flag, please. You're already up. That's good.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, liberty, and justice for all. Please remain standing for a moment of silence. Thank you.
And we're off. Are there any visitors, Carol? Negative. None. Thank you. Business items. We're on page two, folks. We have a consent agenda for items C1 through C2A. Can I have a motion, please?
So moved.
John Siegel, thank you. Second. Rob Scarborough. Thank you, Rob. Any discussions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Action items. Carol, you want to do the honors?
Sure. Approval of the refunding of bonds.
Can I have a motion, please? Deborah Slinkowski, second. Don't be shy. Step right up. Come on. Who's seconding it? Rob Scavo. Any discussion on these? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
Approval of the establishment of the tax levy for the 2006-2007 school year.
Can I have a motion, please?
So moved.
Tony Falco. Second by Fred Teneri. Any discussion on these? All in favor? Opposed? Acceptance of the auditor's report, year ending 6/30/06. Oh, Carol, I just did your thing. Right. I'm sorry. Can I have a motion, please? John Siegel, second, please. Douglas Duncan. Any discussion on this? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
Approval of the Sachem Legislative Committee members with the exception of Alfred Mar Turana. He has declined the appointment, so please cross his name off on the agenda.
Can I have a motion, please?
Uh-oh.
Tony Falco, second, please. Fred Teneri, discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The approval of, I'm sorry, go ahead, Carol.
Approval of the Budget Advisory Committee members.
Can I have a motion, please?
Uh-oh.
Tony, second.
Second.
Mike Boddy. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Next.
Approval of the Capital Projects Advisory Committee.
Who is that, Tony?
Yeah.
Second, please.
Second.
Fred? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
Approval of the Citizens Advisory Audit Committee.
Motion, please.
Move.
Tony Falco, second by Douglas Duncan. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
Approval for two board members' attendance at the New York State School Boards Association Convention.
So moved. Second.
Mike Boddy, second by Tony Falco. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Monthly reports. We're on page six. I told you it'd be fast. Page six. Questions on the child care, community educational building usage, financial reports? Okay. Discussion items and presentations. AIS math presentation is first.
Paul, do you want to introduce everyone today?
Thank you, Charlie. Mr. Pomara, Mr. Boddy, board members, members of the community. As you know, last year we spent considerable time with our middle school curriculum, looking at test data, gathering evidence to determine what does and doesn't work in our middle school program. Since the onset of the testing and the state testing in mathematics, we've seen slow, steady progress in our eighth grade test scores, but clearly we were not satisfied with what we were seeing when we compared ourselves to neighboring districts. We charged our math department at the middle school level with the development of a true academic intervention program to provide our neediest students with the remediation and the skills development that they sorely needed. The students that are in the AIS program are now receiving a total of 270 days of math instruction rather than the 180 days that they previously had received. This summer, a team of our middle school math teachers met to develop the curriculum for the AIS program. The goals really were to simply break the cycle of failure, determine why our students are not achieving at a higher level, and to really examine how students learn and how we could develop a program that would address the needs of our students. I would like to, at this time, introduce the middle school math chair people that are here tonight to make the presentation. And I would also like to thank our middle school administrators for being here as well. Seated at the table from the board's right to left is Patty Scaturo, the math chairperson at Sagamore, Christine DiGiacinto, the chairperson at Sequoia Middle School, Alicia Miller in the center from Samoset, Rich Flynn, our chairperson at Seneca, and Diane Mills, who recently retired but has been working with us on a consultancy basis this year in terms of implementing our AIS program. So I'd like to thank you all for being here, especially Mrs. Caturo, who really wants to get home for the start of the Met game, so thanks. At this time, I'll turn it over to Mrs. Mills to get the presentation started. Diane, maybe I could ask you to sit at the table at the microphone and perhaps someone else can advance the slides for you.
We had a committee of teachers representing each of the four middle schools from grades 7 and 8. They worked for a week in the beginning of July. And it won't go. We're having a technical problem. So this committee brainstormed, and first we reflected on what is it that we expect a student needs to be able to do to succeed in mathematics. Next, we discuss what areas of weaknesses have we witnessed for our students who are struggling. Knowing what a student needs and what obstacles we recognize, what do we want to accomplish in this AIS program? So we set up the following goals. Once we establish the goals, what instruments are we going to employ to reach our goals, knowing what we do about the profile of the AIS population? Varying the activities, Varying the activities helps to hold student attention. Pre-teaching gives the student some confidence when he or she enters their regular math class. And reteaching allows an opportunity for students to ask questions about what they had difficulty with in their class. So now we'll take a look at what we've put into action. We administered a learning inventory of the whole population that we had in the AIS class. And we kind of really found out different results than we expected. From this learning inventory, we were able to assess each student's learning style preference. What this means is how they best take in information. A teacher's role is to diversify instruction so that each of the modalities of learning is available to the different learners in the class. These are our results. Visual learners historically perform well in school, yet our learning inventory results indicate that visual is the lowest learning preference among our AIS students. Some students demonstrate no specific preference or a combination of two modalities equally. This is interpreted differently for different students. However, when a student is not performing up to standard, it is believed that that student has not yet developed a successful modality for learning. Different styles obviously work at different times for different people. And while all this is true, why is visual the number one preference for learning? All assessments are written and visual. In a perfect world, each student should be assessed in the learning modality that they illustrate a preference for. The auditory learner should be able to verbally communicate what he or she is being assessed on. The kinesthetic learner should be able to physically demonstrate what he or she knows. But that's not where we're at in education. Our assessments are all visual. So what we need to do is teach these students some visual cues that they don't automatically be able to do on their own. So here are a couple illustrations of things that we are implementing throughout the district. Here's an example of one type of study guide that some teachers are implementing. A picture or a key saying the clue helps the student remember the word. As we learn more and more about how the brain works, we learn more about exactly how we learn. To maximize what our brain retains in long-term memory, the new information must be linked to prior experience or prior knowledge. If not, it will be not retained but discarded. This student sees integers as opposing forces battling each other. Here are the two Ninja Turtles practicing for battle. This visual works for this student but might not work for another student. So each student must come up with his or her own association, for example, for integers in this particular case. Another strategy that we might see being used in the district is a strategic notebook. Writing the word, your own definition of the word, and your own example or illustration of this can be a useful study skill. A student can be studying by covering one column and then practicing filling in the other two columns. Another student-made aid could be a graphic representation of a concept. This helps organize and compare the patterns, procedures, or math facts. You would put in the word integer, the kid would come up with his own definition, the kid will provide his own example, and then, as a contrast to that, non-examples. Foldables are another student-made tool to use to organize mathematical ideas and their relations to each other. It's a pictorial representation of standard note-taking. The fact that counting numbers is a subset of wholes and wholes is a subset of integers is clearly illustrated here. Not so well in that picture, but I have a foldable here, where the child will actually see that the counting numbers are inside the whole numbers. The whole numbers are inside the set of integers by making this foldable and actually cutting out the sets within themselves. It looks like an arts and crafts project if you don't understand that one is just a subset of the other, which is what the children are learning. Reconstructing abstract mathematical concepts through concrete representation helps many students create a tangible model to take hold of. These concrete models are the aids that help a student be able to make mathematics real. How are we going to assess the students? An informal assessment of what one is thinking and an opportunity of immediate feedback of one's active work is the optimum means of assessment. Learning not only what to study, but how to study is essential for students who at this stage of development have not acquired successful study skills. How do we assess our program goals? The students are encouraged to use the various strategic studies tools that we've made in the AIS class to prepare for the chapter tests in their math classes. The AIS class offers an opportunity to confer with individual students and help them self-evaluate what their strengths and weaknesses were so they can do differently to improve on the next test. This is a given. Students that have educational support at home have the best advantage of being successful in school. Parents that actively engage in their children's schoolwork will witness an increase in their child's overall achievement. Many parents have a phobia about mathematics themselves. We intend to ease that anxiety with offering a back-to-school workshop. Our intent is to open the awareness of different learning styles by administering the learning inventory to the parents themselves. Next, we intend to discuss the study strategies that can be implemented at home to improve memorization of facts and procedures. And lastly, illustrating the features of our newly adopted text series, designed to offer parents and students opportunities to use the text as a supplement to the math teacher, will be demonstrated in this workshop. Thank you for your attention and your support. Any questions?
Let's let everybody get back to their seats, and we'll see if anybody has. Does anyone have anything they'd like to say?
We'll hand out. I did the notes to not the pictures, but the notes of the presentation, so you can have that to refer to.
Okay. I'm sure there's going to be a couple of questions, so if you guys could hang in there for a few minutes. Oh, they're not doing it now. No. This is for the board, if the board has any questions. If parents have questions, they can come to a meeting on the 19th of October.
We're running a parent workshop.
A parent workshop. Yes. Will they be able to ask you questions about the program in general?
Informal
okay.
workshop.
And if they have any questions that they feel are really burning issues, they can call the department people. Thank you. Okay, this is strictly for the Board of Ed right now. So, Charlie, do you want to say something first? Or does anyone have a question along here? Rob, go ahead.
Hi, how are you? I looked at the math AIS program. It was in our packet a couple months ago. And a couple questions I have as to number of students in the program, in the class. Does the instruction tend to be an independent study? Is there lessons that are given on a daily basis, and how are the students assessed on their work? Is there exams? Because my following question is are they going to be receiving a grade in the AIS program, and is it going to count towards their weight? I have quite a few questions.
So pretty much what's going to happen is teacher's going to come in and provide a lesson for the students. They're all going to be working on the same task, or is it, you know?
Maybe not. Okay. We're trying to provide differentiated instruction for mm-hmm. students within the classroom. Okay. So you may have a group working on one activity on one side of the room and two other groups working on different activities. Certain students are not performing well in concept transition. Mm-hmm. You're going to have them work on that. Want to prevent it from just being a group type of lesson. We want to mm-hmm. differentiate it as much as possible from classroom instruction.
We're doing a lot of pre-teaching, particularly vocabulary, so that the child has a heads up of some of the words that are going to be used in the regular math class that maybe could bog them down with, I don't know what that means, I don't know what he or she's talking about. Mm-hmm. And so they're thinking about that word instead of focusing in on the context that's being presented. So we're trying to make sure that we're ahead of the curriculum, doing some activities, exposing the kids to some of the words, doing the vocabulary words to some of the mm-hmm. words that we know that they need to know within a given unit. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, as we know they've learned material, trying to organize the material that was presented to them in the math class in one of these strategic ways, so a different way, more organized, a more visual way, so that if they didn't get it in the math class, maybe they can get it through this other vehicle. So it's really a support of the class all along the way. Okay. It's not so much that we're teaching the math, but the math class is teaching the math. We're supporting what was being taught in the math class through other modalities.
And one last question. Is there a rubric in place as to how students are being graded? I mean, what difference between a student gets a 70 opposed to a student gets an 85 or a 90?
Yeah, there is a rubric in place, and I think it's being utilized a little differently in each individual classroom, but it's well communicated to the students. But there is a rubric that we established over the summer. It's a 5-point rubric.
Okay.
I would say their grade in this class really more reflects their effort rather than their achievement. Because we're not grading them necessarily on their performance in a math test, but we're grading them on their performance in study skills, strategic study skills for the math class.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? John?
Good evening. Can you give us the number of students in Sequoia and Samoset also? I know you said 15 in Seneca.
That's an average in
Seneca. Okay, yeah, an average, but what about Sequoia and Samoset? Okay.
And Samoset, anywhere between 8 and 20 also.
Let's see, very big spread. Question, now you were saying the grading is subjective. Now, how are we going to monitor if these children are succeeding? Yeah, I know you also have here improvement in quarterly grades. What happens if the student doesn't succeed? What's in place?
One of the things that most of our teachers do is we ask the kids to bring their tests back into the AIS class so we can take a look at what they did well, what they did poorly on, and we're monitoring their grades per test, per chapter. Personally, what I do in my building is I have the teachers come up with 5 or 6 questions from the test that the kids are doing poorly on that we've already addressed, and then we'll readdress those areas. Beyond that, we're ultimately working towards the assessment in March to see how well our students improve 1 year over the next. The students who are continually doing poorly, we almost create an individualized area for them and try to focus on the areas that they're weakest in.
Okay, so if there are a number of students, let's say out of an average 15-person class, that aren't succeeding in one particular item, those students who aren't succeeding on this item will be given more repetitive work to do. Now, is that going to take away from the students that are succeeding in this?
No, because you can provide them with other opportunities. We have such a body of material that, and it's pretty widespread, that students who are succeeding, we can now move them ahead. The advantage of having small classes is that we can break it up into smaller groups. And the groups, you can almost come up with 3 separate groups within your AIS class. The ones are doing very well, the ones are holding their own, and then there's going to be a handful that are struggling with it. So you're going to focus on that and hopefully bring them up to the other levels of the other two. Now, what happens is in math, it's sequential, so you move it from chapter to chapter. So you obviously have to move forward. You know, you're going to, you can't stay on chapter one when you're the classroom.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Paul, did you want to say something?
Well, I wanted to thank them for all the hard work in putting this program together. And I think, you know, for anyone in the room to kind of reflect on the way we may have either learned math or, in my case, taught math some 20 years ago, you know, the old way of thinking was if someone's not getting it, just keep doing it, doing it, doing it. More problems, more problems. And that doesn't really work. And I think what Diane and the chairs have really looked at is why are the students struggling? You know, why does this work for a particular student and this doesn't? This whole notion of the learning inventory and really doing some hands-on activities is really proving to be, you know, I would really say revolutionary, really, in the way, if you compare the way we learned math, you know, when we were in school.
I just want to ask the chairs, why don't you talk the board through how the curriculum was developed this summer? And because, you know, some of the things I saw today over at Sagamore gave me a different indication of some of the lessons, how they differ from the regular curriculum, and how you put it together over the course of the year so that the board may get a better understanding about it's not just a tutorial type of program, that it's related to the different strands in math education.
We have a calendar. I don't know if anyone else wants to speak. We have a calendar.
Rich, use the microphone because it's hard for people behind you here. Plus, I have this refrigerator running behind me.
All right. We have a calendar for all 4 middle schools that we all follow, one for each curriculum, one for 7th, one for 8th. We mirrored that calendar for our AIS program. And we basically ask ourselves, okay, this is what we're teaching in the regular classroom at this time. How do we want to structure our AIS class to support that? So we came up with different activities, a graphic organizer, which gives a student a short burst at looking at a particular topic, and hopefully the one or two words will bring back something in their memory. Again, memory is big for these students. We have the graphic organizer. We have vocabulary books. We have various activities with algebra tiles. And this is to support the regular classroom activity. So we follow the same calendar that the regular classroom teacher follows. We're just teaching the particular topic using differentiated instruction.
When you say differentiated instruction, I mean, the people that I've observed the last couple of days, maybe the math chairs can bring us through. You know, how is, you know, what does that mean to the lay person? I mean, how did the activity today differ from then the traditional math lessons that I may see down the hallway in an honors class?
Dr. Murphy was in my classroom today, and presently in the 8th grade regular curriculum, we're working on exponents. So what we did is we did an overview today of all the different exponent rules. So they had their rules on cards that they can go back to and use. I then put different problems on envelopes, and in each envelope was a letter. As they got their questions right, they received a letter. We called it Survivor Day, and they got a reward challenge at the end. And they took out their letters as they got them right. They called me over. They got their letters. When the group had all their letters, they went in a certain spot, and they had to unscramble the word. It ended up being where one of the teachers were born, and the answer was Switzerland. And after they got all their answers right and worked with each other, they unscrambled it. And basically the period was over, and then we gave them their reward, the group that we chose. So it included all the curriculum from that whole section of exponents, but yet they were moving around, they were doing different problems, there was a reward, so it wasn't, they were just sitting in the classroom doing a bunch of problems sitting at a desk. And as I walked up to them, if someone got it wrong, I quickly helped them, their partner could help them, so there was a lot of instruction going on of review work. Plus they had their notes in their hand that they could use to look up all the exponent rules as they were doing it, so it was another study scale at the same time. And the kids really enjoyed it.
And I see that as a more engaging activity for these type of learners when you see that the type of learners that we're looking at. We're not talking about the visual learners. We're talking about these learners that have to really get engaged in it. And within 20 minutes, all these little guys are running around and, you know, solving these equations where, you know, they were asking me for some of the answers, and I was calling the teacher over.
Are there any other questions? Rob?
Just one suggestion. The AAS parent workshop is on the 19th. It's also the scheduled legislative seminar. It's at the Sequoia, correct? My only recommendation would be maybe if we have a big turnout on the 19th for the parent workshop, that maybe we schedule another one a couple of months down the road to maybe attract the parents that weren't out there because they were at the legislative seminar.
We thought, based on the turnout of the first meeting, we would see how many meetings people thought they would be interested. We could do it, you know, quarterly, or we thought we'd survey the parents to see their interest level. I think, you know, that first meeting will give us more of an idea of what they're looking for us to do. It might be they're looking for support to help the kids with their math themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be more frequent, or it could be, you know, I'm just interested in the program, and no, thank you, I don't need any more. But we thought we'd like to do another one, definitely in January. It's preparation of showing them what we'll be doing and getting prepared for the assessments that are in March as well, and running them through some of the types of the questions that the kids will have to be responsible for answering, and the structure of the test and so forth, to make them comfortable and for what their children will be doing in March. So it'll be interesting to see. We had a mailing that went home, and we had open school night last night, and we made sure that every parent who came to AIS also got a second copy of the invitation. And we asked for an RSVP so we'd have an idea of how many parents we're talking about, so we had the right logistics set up. Mm-hmm. And so far, I think we have about 30 or 40 parents that are coming.
Sounds like it's going well. You're obviously all well prepared with it. What about the articulation between the classroom teacher, you know, the math teacher? How frequent is that? And I know you've made some reference to it. I had about four questions, but everybody asked them ahead of me, so I'm just making this one up as I go along.
I think it's daily.
Because I'm a Yankee fan, so I don't care if you see the Mets. Sorry, Patty.
I think at this point there's a daily communication going on.
Good.
The it's a widespread amount of teachers, which we kind of designed it that way, teaching it so that it's not just one teacher in a building teaching it, so there's constant communication, conferring, because that offers staff development as we're going along. This worked for me. This didn't work. Let's try this. Tomorrow we're having a half-day workshop for the 7th grade AIS and another half-day workshop for the 8th grade AIS teachers to come in and do what we call a tuning protocol. Everyone's going to bring something that they have done that's really worked, that they really thought had a positive impact, so we can start building a portfolio of things that we know that work. So it's a work in progress. Maybe though some of the planning we did over the summer, some of the things didn't work out as well as we expected them. So we'll just let those go by, and we'll plug in other things that we have found along the way that are working.
Great. That was my next question as far as, you know, whether you met on a regular basis to see what works and doesn't work. And so now all my questions are gone. Okay. Anybody else have anything? Thank you very much. Is there a question? I'm sorry. I missed you. Go ahead. Come on.
We still have a modified program in effect for the eighth graders. Have you coordinated your efforts, you know, with both AIS and modified? Are some of the modified children going into the AIS program?
Yes. In the eighth grade, the modified students who do not have a resource room or other support are in the AIS class. And that fosters that constant daily communication between the teachers, because everybody teaches things differently, we support our students differently, and when you have all of those kids in the same class, well, different teachers use different words and they get confused, so we're constantly on a discussion with the modified teachers. They're staying around the same place where we are in the curriculum. If they happen to fall behind and they're not on the same day that we are in the regular classroom, then the students are seeing it as a pre-teach as opposed to a reteach. So they're getting the material either way, and there's constant communication between everybody so that we can best help these kids in every way we can.
It must be a challenge because it's two different types of the way you're teaching these children. Don't you find that difficult? I mean, wouldn't that be confusing for the student?
Really confused. I think it's helping them sometimes hearing it a different way, learning it a little bit. I mean, of course, it's not being completely different because we all teach the same kind of topics. But, you know, a trick one teacher has, then they tell it a different way. I think it's been working out well, hearing it two different ways.
It's taken the kids a little while to get used to it also, because they're not used to having two different math teachers and two different ways to do it, but they're starting to see how to utilize that, and that's all part of the course. We need to find what's going to work for you in math to make you successful, and they're taking ownership in that, and it's really working out well.
Thank you. Have a good night, folks. Go Mets. Next. R.S. Abrams External Audit Report.
Bruce, I saw Marianne outside.
Is Marianne here? Thank you all for being here tonight, folks. Hello, Marianne.
Hello.
Good. Good to see you. This is Marianne Van Dyne from R.S. Abrams, and she's going to speak to the issue of our external audit report. So
Mike,
whenever you're ready.
Mike, I also want to mention we have two people from the audit subcommittee here also.
I'll introduce them, absolutely.
Maureen and Jeff, if you could want to stand
up.
Stand up
so we can. Thank you very much for being on the committee.
This year's audit
is a little bit different because of the new requirement of having an audit subcommittee. I had the fortunate experience of working with the audit committee. We met three times during the year to go over our audit process, our risk assessment, as well as our final audit findings. And we had some good discussion, and we went into in-depth in the management letter as well as the financials. I believe that the minutes were attached to those meetings on what we discussed, but this is a new requirement that most districts are who have an audit subcommittee that is not the full board, where the external auditors are meeting during the year more frequently and reviewing our process throughout the whole process. And I think this is a big step with the five-point plan, and I think it's helpful for school districts to understand the financial process, the audit process. And this also occurs with your internal auditors and your claims auditors. So it is a new, this year was a little bit different from years past, but we are now presenting the audit report to the board. And this year, the due date has been changed. It was originally October 30th, and the state pushed it forward 2 weeks. So the new due date for this year is October 15th for the audit report. So we're here, and you'll be able to get your report in a timely fashion. I'd like to thank Bruce and his staff. They're very well-run. There's a well-run operation in the business office, and with the help of him and his staff, we were able to work on the audit throughout the whole summer. We're actually here all year round. We test your controls throughout the whole year, but the year-end financial audit is done in the summer, and they were very helpful, and because they were so helpful, we were able to meet all our deadlines and get the reports done in a timely fashion. So I thank you, Bruce, and whoever else is here from your staff. I don't know if anybody came, but thank them for us. Okay, you have a copy of the financial statements, and within the packet, there are three sets of audits that we complete. We do the GASB 34 financial, which is the first part. Then we do the single audit, which is an audit of all your grants, because you get funding from the federal government. We do a separate audit on your federal grants. And then the third part of the packet is your extra classroom accounts. You have many extra classroom accounts. Each school has an extra classroom account. So we spend a lot of time looking at your extra classroom accounts in all the schools. Within the packet, you'll see that we had no problem opining to the financial statements. All the opinions were unqualified opinions. We've also included this year a status of prior year findings, which is something new we've done, so that you can monitor what previous recommendations were made by us, which ones have been implemented and which ones still need to be implemented. But I'm happy to say that Mr. Singer has implemented just about all the recommendations from last year, and the ones from this year, I know he already did a corrective action plan and started implementing our recommendations for this year. So that's an additional report that we gave you for this year in addition to the management letter. Within the management letter, we do have some recommendations. There's nothing material in it. There's mostly procedural in nature. There were no material weaknesses in your controls. You have very strong controls. But we do spend a lot of time out in the field looking at your controls. So we will have recommendations to improve the controls that you already have. But like I said, they're easy to implement. It's not going to take a lot of time to implement these recommendations. And it shouldn't be very costly to the district to implement our recommendations. Within the financial statement, we also have what we call a management discussion and analysis, which pretty much talks about your financial position this year compared to last year, your budget versus actual, and that kind of like puts in layman's term what the financials are all about. So that's a new addition to the GASB 34 financials, which were implemented a couple of years ago, which I think is very helpful in understanding the financial position of the district. We have, in addition, in the management letter, we discussed some changes that are affecting school districts. Number one, I know we've talked about GASB 45 is coming down the road. June 30th, 2008, you're going to have to put a liability on your books for your retirees' health insurance. And we give you kind of an outline of what you should be doing. And I know you are in the process of getting an actuarial firm to give you an analysis of what that liability is going to be. No district is going to be able to fully fund this liability, and it's not required to be fully funded, but you will have to establish a funding policy. The board's going to have to discuss that. Once you do get that actuarial valuation, you'll have to come up with a plan on how you're going to fund it and how much you want to fund. So that's something that you're going to have to start working on within the next year, because, like I said, June 30th, 2008, that's going to be put on your financial statements. In addition to that, we talked a little bit about the five-point plan, and you already implemented all the phases of the five-point plan. You have your internal audit function, your claims function, your external auditor. You have your audit committee, so you've implemented all those areas. If anybody has specifics on anything, I was very happy with the way the audit went. I was happy with the controls of the district and the financial position of the district. This year you were able to give back $6 million more to the taxpayers, which was very good, because you did end with a nice financial position, as well as you were able to put some monies into reserve. So you are preparing yourself for long term as well as looking at your short term needs. So I thought that was very helpful this year also.
Thank you, Maria. In general, then we're managing our money correctly. I mean, yes. The report is really good. You know, I read it. I read the letter that you wrote to me, and I appreciate that. And any of your suggestions are being implemented. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when budget time comes around, we're going to have the usual yahoos out here, yelling about, you should have done this, or you should spend money for this or that. But I think, we've really kept it solid, and that way we get over that 18% hump that we had a couple of years back, and we're able to come up with 1.6, which we were able to live up to, and hopefully this year will be a good year also as far as spending and so on. So I appreciate your help. Does anyone have any questions they'd like to ask? Anyone? Boy, you're getting off easy tonight. Thanks so much.
This is my second meeting tonight.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thanks for all your hard work also.
Thank you.
Next is Connect Ed. Who's going to speak to this issue?
I'll speak to this issue.
Okay. Dr. Murphy, you're on.
I brought this to the board's attention, the idea of Connect Ed. Is one of the big goals this year is goal number two is community communication. And it seems that the community is very interested in getting more information from the school district to the home in a fairly efficient manner. And in the past, you'd send letters home, you'd send notices, and the turnaround time for some of these things is slow when it comes to snail mail or notices, where people in the email day and the day of technology expect instant answers. And I think Connect Ed would be a nice way to start to give the school district parents some information right away. And what Connect Ed does is any principal or administrator really has a code, so a code to a phone where they can make announcements, whether they're informational, whether they're emergency announcements, to their school, to a particular grade level, to a particular sport, and in fact the entire district. So one thing you could use this for is weather delays and snow closings. I could sit home at my home and make a call at 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning. I just press in a magic code. My voice comes out on 10,000 phones, family phones in the district. So everyone gets a call in the district letting them know that school's closed. No more checking News 12 and things like that. Boom, it's there. So the weather delays, snow closings are a great way. But there's also the informational part, which clarifying things. You know, there from time to time, unfortunately, you get bomb threats or police activity at some of the schools, and the parents may see a flash on News 12 or one of the news programs, and they don't get all the information. Where a principal can get on the phone and just speak to their part of the community and say, you know, just let you know, parents, today we had the police activity today. There was a bomb threat that was called in. Police came through. We emptied out the building. They checked everything out. Everything's safe and sound. If you have any questions, send me an email or give me a call in the office. This way they're hearing it directly from the principal within 5 minutes after an incident rather than possibly 2 or 3 days later when you mail a letter home. But it can also be informational. Sports night tickets are on sale at Cayuga School at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. And we can cut down on some of the paper that's being sent home when a voice comes across the phone instantly. This year would have been really helpful in June when we had to cancel graduation on that Saturday. And then we're rescheduling. Instead of making all those manual phone calls to all the graduates, we could have done it at really one phone call to all the seniors. So even things coming up, Election Day, not this year, but we have a half day coming up for the elementary schools to remind parents it's a half day this day, you know, make arrangements, things like that. We're just at a touch of the button. This information get out to the community, reminders, information, clarifying things for parents. The principal, school superintendent, a district-wide administrator can get in touch with a whole cadre of people at an instant, and it can be clear. What we have to do in the beginning is just make sure that you get verification with the cell phones and the regular phones. And once that's done, it's going to be a nice system to get information out to the community. It also has a nice feature, this Connect Ed, about attendance. Rather than having the school nurse call up or the attendance aide calling up multiple people all the time, hello, Mrs. Smith, your child's not at school today. Well, you just get the list. You do a checklist down on the computer, boom, 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 and then everyone gets a call at one time rather than going, you know, manually calling this person and manually calling this person. One thing, and everyone gets a message, and it could be from the principal's voice, can be on this voicemail and say, you know, I just want to let you know your child is out of school today. If you please call the school, you know, whatever that message may be, but it's a nice attendance feature too. And according to the people connected, it helps with these type of issues to remind parents that, you know, attendance is important. So we can get the system through BOCES. It is aidable, and we get just about half of it back. And Bruce may be able to talk better about those things, but I know a number of school districts, a great number of school districts, have received this and are using this. Brentwood, Middle Country, Longwood, Three Village, and everyone is very happy with it.
Is Riverhead using this, Charlie?
I don't know if they're using this, but they may be. School districts all over. It's every school. Almost every school district will have this system within the next couple of years because the parents just find it so useful that someone can get this information to you at an instant. And it's if we're calling a delay or an early closing, the phone call just doesn't go to your regular number. It also can go to up to, I think, 8 different numbers. So you can mark a cell phone number or a work number, and everyone get called. And the same thing with staff. We really won't need an emergency snow chain anymore for staff. One phone call, and everyone gets the notification rather than that snow chain that inevitably breaks down after somebody rolls over and falls asleep on it. Usually the teachers find that funny, unless you don't get that call. And that's it. Any questions?
John, did you have a question?
Yes, Charlie, I had one quick question. Now, how does this work with answering machines versus people picking up the telephone?
Well, it'll leave a message on an answer machine. It'll leave a message on someone picking up the phone call. They said the problem is sometimes you could send out an informational message, and if Junior picks up the phone call and just listens to it and doesn't hand it over to someone, the message may not get home to someone. But the system also records and lets everyone know, was the phone picked up? Was it answered? Was it busy? And it'll try multiple times to get through, but it can't guarantee it's going to speak to a...
My concern is more if it calls my house and...
It will leave a message on the answer machine.
Okay, but it'll when will it start playing the message? As soon as the answer machine picks up? I mean, I have my outgoing messages. I'm sure everybody else does. I mean, so will I only get the last half of the message?
I think it starts at the beep.
Okay. Well, I mean, then how does it work?
Because they did say that it does work on answer machines and things like that.
John, it does. I could tell you this because the reason I asked about Riverhead is because for some reason I'm on Riverhead's list. I don't know why.
My daughter works there, but she's married. Her and her husband work there, so they have a different last name. But I got home and I had messages, and it said, just want to let you know that we're doing this, or there's a conference or something. And it was Assistant Soup from Riverhead. So I don't have any kids out there, I don't think, anyway. But I don't know. It sounds like a great system. Do we pay, is it a per youngster charge for this?
Yes, it is.
And who sets this up?
We work through BOCES.
BOCES sets it up? We give them, does
Maddie? BOCES works through ConnectEd. ConnectEd comes in, they train our staff. They help us work through the first run with the phones. And they said after a couple of times that you do the tests, then you really start to narrow down and bring it up to real 95-100% on phone.
Do we give the information through, what Matt DeMeo has all the phone numbers.
Exactly.
Pentimation.
And it works, and his system is
okay.
Works with ConnectEd.
Terrific. And one more question, Deborah, because everybody asked my questions last time. And I'm the president, so I could go first if I want to. It's managed by the district. Is that correct? We take care of it. If there's an issue with it, then BOCES takes care of it. Is that correct?
I think we take it over, and we work through. If we have any problems with it, we call the ConnectEd service representatives, and they work with us. BOCES is just working through the aid part. So they have it listed as one of their...
ConnectEd is a company.
Right.
And that works through... It's contracted through BOCES.
Exactly.
So Douglas, it's aidable. Isn't that good? Douglas loves the aid issues. Deborah, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Sounds like a great idea.
I'm assuming this works in conjunction with our phone system.
Yes, it works with our phone system.
Okay.
The phone system, if I called from my house to say school's canceled, the number that's going to come up on everyone's caller ID will not be my home phone.
Okay.
It will be a district number.
All right.
Just because there will be people who get a 5:30 in the morning phone call who will want to call me back. So.
All right. If we change,
catch me at 9 o'clock.
If we change phone systems, that won't have an impact on it?
No.
Okay. So it works in conjunction with any type of phone system that we have. Yes? Okay.
Exactly.
Why the change in the BOCES aidable portion the following year?
Because then we'll have a full year, 8 months to
only
12 months.
Okay, but we're not really going to be utilizing this system throughout the summer, right? Or we will.
They charge on a yearly basis. Yearly. You could use it during the summer. You could remind people we're going to have senior sign-ups at this date. We're going to have school physicals at this date. We're going to have Beat the Rush guidance meeting at this date. And you could constantly. There are some people that I was speaking at a superintendent's. I was at a superintendent's meeting the other day who said that, they have to calm some of the principals down because they like to use it very often. And others, they have to really use this. We're paying for it, and it's a great service. So, some people take full advantage and other people don't take advantage. But we would try to make it try to encourage as many people to use it as possible, but not overuse it, that people are going to start hanging up on you.
Douglas.
Dr. Murphy, is this something that is so specific that we could, for instance, later in the month we had the AIS workshop, that we could just call the AIS math parents and let them know of the workshop?
Yes.
Okay.
And the ConnectEd people also said that we can put the Board of Education on this too. So one phone call, I can get some good information out to you rather than calling everyone individual.
Fred Teneri has a question.
Now, I know we have a set fee, but usually the systems, they have a certain amount of calls. You go over that, there's an extra fee. Is this a...
You can use as much as you want. The problem is, as ConnectEd fellow said in the same thing, if you overuse it, you're going to have people start to hang up on you, and you want to find that fine balance of, that law of diminishing returns.
Yeah. Okay, thanks.
Any other questions? Sounds really good. What do you need from us tonight?
I'd like to put it on the agenda for
Tuesday.
Tuesday.
Is everybody okay with that? Anybody have an issue with that? Ed, you think it's a good idea? Good. Rob? David? Deborah? Fred? Mike? Yep. Tony? Doug? John? Bruce? No, I'm not asking you, Bruce. I just wouldn't want you to feel left out. All right. That sounds good. Put it on the agenda.
So, Janet, on a February morning, you know, I'll be calling you early. Okay? Just want to let you know. No, it's going to everyone's. It's then we'll. Listen to WALK.
And check the website. Now, are you saying you don't want this, or you're just being the devil's advocate?
I'm being the devil's advocate.
Well, the devil is
then
gone.
Then you can't complain later that you didn't get the information. We offered you a great service to get that information. Same thing with someone starts to say they didn't get the phone call. We can look up your name and say, you know what, you did get the phone call at 5:20. It's that specific that it could tell you what time it left the message, how long the person was on the phone. So if someone's on the phone for a minute or so, you're going to know that you got that phone call and that message.
We still will be.
We're still going to follow up with some other
exactly.
things. Well, when the child gets in school suspension or detention because they're cutting classes. What we have in place right now, and you can take your 3 minutes in a second, but happens now, if somebody calls you up and the attendance aide calls you up and some kid pretends they're mom or dad, what's... I can have it, you could have it rooted to your cell phone. You could have it rooted to your work phone. You have up to, I think, 8 numbers that you could have it rooted to say, okay, the attendance phone calls, we want it to go to X number because I know my child's going to pick up and then hang up.
Okay, the board wants to move ahead with this, so we're going to move ahead with it. We'll deal with these issues as they come up. If someone, you know, we are going to still use WALK, it'll still be on News 12 and every place else we call. If parents don't want to take advantage of this, that's fine, you know, but, you know, they have the option too. And we can't go into their homes if the youngster wants to, you know, clip the message and so on. That's the way it's going to be. So, we can only do so much, and I think this is a great way to communicate. Any other questions from any board members? We're all set with this. Are there any visitors, Carol? Yes? Negative. Oh, negative is speaking again. Okay, good. Any future agenda items? Tony, did you have something you wanted on? I think we have all our future agenda items. I thought you might have had something. Anybody else? Rob, do you have a future agenda item?
There's just one thing. I attended a meeting with Ron Sachs last week about the Brookhaven LIPA Iroquois lateral pipeline that's more than likely going to take place. I don't know if we want to include this as a future agenda item, invite somebody in to speak to us about it, because as it stands right now, that pipeline doesn't affect us, but we do have alternate routes where if LIPA or Iroquois change their minds, will affect us tremendously. So I don't know if it's something that we want to address as a board. Hop Hog School System is already on board with their attorneys, monitoring very closely what's happening, as well as Comac Schools. So we're the last school district that's affected. Pretty much the way the route goes now, it kind of bypasses Waverly Avenue as well as Sagamore, but like I said, the alternate route, runs right through the soccer fields behind Waverly. And you're talking about a 2-inch gas pipe 3 feet below the surface. So if we monitor that so that they don't flip or change their mind, it's where it affects us. I don't know if that's something that we want to discuss as a board.
We've been on this, haven't we, Charlie?
Yeah. Didn't you find out during the presentation that there already is a gas line that goes?
There's a gas line that runs south of the expressway right now, which is part of Keyspan. There's a couple of alternate plans. They can't link up with Keyspan because the size of the pipe will not warrant the.
Does that go through our community?
That's on the south side of the expressway. It doesn't.
Okay.
Okay, but the one that they're proposing is a 22-mile-long pipeline. It's going to, like I said, right now, it kind of cuts south before Waverly Avenue and kind of runs off the property line, But the alternate, which is indicated by a dotted line on the map, if they happen, from what I understand, they keep changing their mind as to which route they're going to take.
The Union Avenue route or the
the
accessway route through the where the towers are if they go through the air.
So I don't know if we want to include it as a discussion or if we just want to just make a recommendation that our school council follow up to make sure that we'll monitor it so that it doesn't change. There is a meeting on October 25th, I believe, at Hop Hop School District.
Right.
We'll have representation there, won't we?
Ron attended and Rob, I believe, they're going back there.
So, okay. So I don't know if we want to include it as a discussion
item. Let's see where it goes, and we'll put it as a discussion item. But I'm sure we're going to be on top of it. There's no doubt about it that we're going to watch where this thing goes. But it can be a discussion item if it warrants it. You know?
I know that Hop Hog had Mike Fitzpatrick, who is, I guess, an assemblyman or councilman, come in and actually speak to the board. Actually, I know it was John Kennedy, one of the assemblymen. And he actually did a presentation as to the specifics of, you know, the pipeline. So, once again, I don't know if it's something that we want to pursue. Because if they do change their mind and they do run that alternate route, it's going to be right on top of our kids playing soccer. So.
Well, we're going to have to monitor it, and we'll take whatever actions. The next meeting is October 17th, 8 p.m., right here, folks. Can I have a motion to go to executive session to discuss items of personnel matters and negotiations? Siegel, Duncan, thank you. Thank you all for being here tonight, folks.